This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And we'll now be letting down the rest of the listening public.
Including on the World Wide Web, we understand.
That's
it's
right.
Up and running this morning.
What is it? Not meeting expectations worldwide. Anyway, we're joined by Mr. Ray Haas. How you doing, Mr. Haas?
Yep, there it is.
I'm at Oshkosh. How could you be any better?
Oh, you got that right. And we ordered up some special weather for you. Oh,
it's fantastic. 95 back home in North Carolina, and beautiful here.
That's the way to go, man. You would definitely want to be here this week. North Carolina's nice. Got family down there. We've been there many times.
Many times, including an upcoming trip on a motorcycle.
Hopefully.
Vroom, vroom.
Excellent.
Anyway, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yes.
This time I can speak.
There you go.
And you've written an interesting book called Touching the Face of God.
Yes, indeed.
Which is the story of
John Gillespie McGee Jr. and his poem High Flight. It's actually in two parts. One is a biography, the true story of John Gillespie McGee. The guy who wrote the poem High Flight, and I don't know that I need to remind pilots about the poem. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings, and the last line is, put out my hand and touch the face of God. I remind people of the poem when I show them my schedule, and most pilots will know it.
If somebody's heard it somewhere.
But the second part is about the poem High Flight itself and why, 75 years after it was written, we're still talking about it. It's still required reading at the Air Force Academy. Why there's so many uses of the poem, people reciting the poem, and it's still just in the subconscious of people. A lot of people saw the television stations when they went off the air. They used to show that little film and had the music, and that's on that DVD, by the way.
Oh, cool.
It is really cool. But people just seem to know the poem. So part of my mission was to figure out why it is. How did this 19-year-old kid, who was a fighter pilot, write a poem that reached inside of me and described precisely how I felt about flying? Every single 14 lines, every single of those lines, one of those lines resonates with me. Well before I was born. How did he do that? And so that was 24 years worth of research later, I figured out that answer, and that's what this book is about. It's really an untold story. There's a couple books out there, very surface treatments, but there's never been a documentary, there's never been a film, there's never been really any in-depth treatment of this story, and it's just an amazing true story. This is, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story about John McGee and his poem.
Was this gentleman, had this guy always written poetry as a school student, or was this like a first attempt, or what?
Well, he was born in China to missionary parents, an American father and a British mother. He went to school in England, and while he was at school there, from about age 13 on, he was writing poetry. And I've got a lot of examples of his poetry. He actually published a little book of poetry at the school that he was at. And so he had written poetry. So when he through the story, he went to Canada, joined the Royal Canadian Air Force. It's a long story there. There's a whole book about it.
It does fill a book, yes.
It does,
but
really.
The poem kind of came from his love of poetry, and he turned out to be a natural pilot, loved flying. And then in his seventh flight in a Spitfire, was up to 33,000 feet in a Spitfire Mark II, which is a little...
That was only his seventh flight?
Seventh flight. He was still in training, operational training. And he was just struck with this poem, and he wrote it and included it in a letter to his parents, who were in Washington, D.C. His father was rector at the St. John's Church, which is right across the street from the White House, and FDR's personal chaplain, actually.
Wow.
So, and that feeds into how it became famous, but it was the marriage of those things, plus this letter was... kind of explaining to his father how he felt about spirituality and religion and such like that. So it is a spiritual poem, but it's also just something, somehow or other, pilots. He gave us pilots real relief, because people ask us what we feel about flying, and we kind of go, oh, yeah, it's really cool, and it's great, and it's fun, and it's a bleh, bleh.
Yeah.
Now we can just hand him this poem.
Yep.
Read this. That's how I feel about flying.
course, now, you know, my little ultralight thing doesn't exactly slip the Surly Bonds as much as just...
Well, it stretches them a little
bit.
Well, I have radio-controlled clubs, RC clubs, who adopted this poem.
No kidding.
Know, they slip the Surly Bonds with their radio-controlled airplanes. You know, why not?
Yep, flying is flying.
It is.
Wow.
The only difference between flying radio control and full scale is just the perspective.
And cost.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that because I know guys have got airplanes out there that cost more than my car.
And yes.
And
the,
they're RC.
The radio control guys seem to crash more than the real ones.
Yeah, and it always makes YouTube better too as well.
There you go.
Plenty of videos of
them. Yes.
So it's a shame he died so young.
Yes, it is. But you know, as tragic as many aviation losses are. He died doing what he loved to do. He actually, 3 months after he wrote the poem in September of 1941, he and his squadron was above the clouds. They were in Spitfires. They were doing practice, and then they didn't have the radar and all that. So they're coming through the clouds at 350 miles an hour through a hole in the clouds, and there was a bomber trainer, and he collided with that. He didn't die in combat, but he accomplished something that. Like I said, 75 years later,
a lasting legacy.
Still talking about it, and it's a wonderful, great story. I'll be at the Sky Shop and the Warehouse several times this week, and I give a presentation at the museum about this story on Wednesday and Friday at 10 o'clock, and I have another couple EA Radio interviews here coming up.
Yep.
So. Looking at the history of this, first off, there were two misconceptions in there that I was never aware of. First, I had always assumed that John Gillespie McGee was killed in combat, was shot down. I had no idea it was a mid-air collision.
Right.
The second thing was I never knew he was an American. I had always assumed he was English.
He was an American. And even the U.S. Air Force website has inaccurate information. I called him up and said, you know, and they said, well, who the heck are you? Well, I'm going to call him back up and say, I wrote the book.
Yeah, there you go.
I wrote the book
on it.
And I've got 24 years worth of research. All the facts in there have been verified.
You've been researching it that long?
24 years. I started right here at Oshkosh in 1990.
Oh, my goodness.
The 50th anniversary of the Battle of Britain. That's what I was originally working on, and I got a little bit diverted.
Were you ever able to meet any of his relatives?
I have talked to his brothers David and to Hugh McGee. Hugh McGee is the only one still alive. He actually posted a review of my book on Amazon. The book's available on Amazon and Kindle and print versions. But I've communicated with two of his brothers, David and Hugh, and his girlfriend that he went back to England for, Eleanor, and Barry Needham, who flew with John McGee. I've interviewed him in Canada, 95 years old, sharp as a tack.
So wow. You've really done some legwork on this thing.
Yes, I have.
I'll bet it was a lot of fun too.
I was out there talking to your gal out here before I came on, and just giving her an interview. And
that's us,
because I want to make this into a feature film, and it can't just be pilots. I want to reach out and say, you know, for the young people, that's an inspirational thing. That's
right.
An inspirational story. How a young kid, you know, 19 years old, was able to do something that's, it's really important, and it contributes to the field. Just because you're young doesn't mean you can't do great things.
Well, that's the other conception, I think, that everybody thinks of the World War II soldiers and stuff as being much older, as being 20s, 25s, and a lot of them were, but a lot of them were so young when they went in as well.
Yes, well, World War II, of course. Well, John McGee bucked the trend. He actually joined the Royal Canadian Air Force in 1940. He gave up his scholarship at Yale to go across the border and join when the rest of the country is still very isolationist. And he joined, you know, and against the odds, became a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
And
the rank of pilot officer, from what I understand, that's actually pretty hard to do in the. Royal Air Force.
Yes, the RCF to get a commission, and that's all in there how he got it, and it's a great story. If I do say so myself.
a little biased there.
I admit it.
Just a touch. Where you say you're going to be doing a book signing?
I am. I'm doing several more. I will be at the Sky Shop today at noon, and then 4:30 tomorrow at the Warehouse, and then another one at noon on Thursday, and then a presentation on Wednesday and Friday, And the book there, I have a DVD. I have a copy of the original manuscript that's for sale and a DVD that has recitations from Russell Crowe, Orson Welles, Jimmy Stewart, John Denver's song in there, all with High Flight in there.
Cool. You are aware that years past, Oscar Bosch, airshow performer and former Luftwaffe pilot, used High Flight in his airshow routine.
I'll be darned.
It was very well done.
Yes.
Who would have thought Luftwaffe pilot? Yeah.
Well, Martin Caton's book, Samurai, about the Japanese ace fighter pilot, in the very far front part of that book is High Flight. So it was
it's universal.
Japanese pilots, you know, his favorite poem was, was High Flight, too.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Ray.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, and we'll definitely be looking to see you out there on the grounds.
You bet.
All right. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio.